It's good to be here. I was away last week in Edmonton. Who loves Edmonton? Okay. There's a few Edmontonians. We have some people here at this church who came from Edmonton and decided that the fresh ocean air was the way for them. Though, just so you know, our air isn't very high quality these days. We love our wood stoves, hey? Who has a wood stove in their house? Anyone? No, everyone's embarrassed about that now. I can't tell anymore. What's a wood stove? Anyways, I was in Edmonton, and Edmonton is a different place. It's a different land for me. It's a bit foreign for me. I used to feel like I've been to Edmonton a lot in my life, but since moving to the Comox Valley, Edmonton felt like even more of a foreign land than going from Victoria to Edmonton. Has anyone ever heard of a place called West Edmonton Mall? Some of us have heard of such a thing. Well, I showed up to West Edmonton Mall, and it's somewhat different than our mall here in the Comox Valley. I went there, and I mean, it was crazy kind of to be a part of that experience. In a given day, especially in the summertime, that mall can have up to like five times as many people as our city. That's kind of crazy. That's a lot of people. Anyways, so I was there. This was just a regular old Saturday. It took us 20 minutes to park in the mall, which is what it takes to get across our whole city on a bad day. But I show up into the mall, and I'm like, what? There's a gun range. You could literally go in and shoot guns, and I wanted to go do it, and it didn't work out. But I was like a child in a candy shop when I went to West Edmonton Mall, because we showed up. We're walking along, and I'm sure you've seen, you know, that water thing right in the middle of that one spot. Well, there's a seal show going on. Has anyone seen the seal show? I was just like, it was the happiest moment of my life for some reason. I'm like, what? Look what's going on down there. Look at what, come on. And my friend is there who had me out. His name's Rob Penny. We used to do youth ministry together. He was in Colwood and I was in Victoria back in the day. And we were there and we looked down. I'm like, there's seals there. Look at it. Watch out, kids. See you later. I step in. There's all these kids. The parents are like, yeah, you can watch. And I'm like, can I watch, Mr. Rob? Like, and I went down and I was just like, I don't know why I was so pumped on this, but I was. I'm like, look at how fat that is, and it still just leaps out of the water and slowly glides along the thing. Like, these are impressive animals. I was like, yes, it's cool. Anyways, and he's like, can we go now? Like, what's going on? Okay, sounds good. And we carry on, walk along. Eventually, we're walking, and all of a sudden, there's a full-blown hockey game with fans and horns and everything going on right in the middle of the mall. And I'm like, Rob, there's a hockey game going on. Can you see that? He's like, yeah, what's wrong with you? Like, let's go, keep going. And we wander all through and do our thing. And I just couldn't even believe, I don't know why it was so shocking to me this time, except I realized maybe why it was so shocking to me and why it was so foreign to me when I thought about my last experience at our mall. I remember my last experience. It was when we had a big snowfall. I went to Canadian Tire to get a new wiper, and I was going to go out this one door, but then this tantalizing smell of cinnamon caught me. Anyone ever been caught by that? Sensational cinnamon buns or whatever it's called. I don't care what it's called. The smell is what it's called. And so I go out this way. I'm following my nose. I'm like, I belong here. Can I get something? And my experience there was so different because, well, I show up and there's this lady who's just come in it's dumping snow outside. She can't walk very well. She's got a walker. And she's come in all of the snow and gotten herself into this space. And the person there's only one person working the counter, and she says, whatever this lady's name is, I don't remember her name, Joan, oh, you came in all the snow, oh my, okay, we need to get you sorted out. She goes, you're going to have to wait, sir. I'm like, yeah, no problem. So she goes and gets her seated all down, walks her across the mall. I'm standing there, like, no one's helping me, I'm just there, but it doesn't matter, we're taking care of her, right? So she goes and gets her sat down, she comes back, don't worry about your coffee today, I'll get it. She comes back, pours the coffee, she goes, I'm going to be a few minute, sir. Pours the coffee, nice, brings it out to the spot where customers would normally mix their stuff up. She doctors it up just right, mixes it up, puts the lid on. Just a minute, sir. Walks over here, takes it out to the lady, sits down for a little while, has a coffee. Just kidding, she didn't do that, but just takes care of everything. I'm thinking, in West Edmonton Mall, this person would have been fired 9 times by that point. But here we love, this is what we know. This is our culture. Like, this is good. West Edmonton Mall felt foreign to me because this is what I know, right? This is what I've experienced. Also, I was in Edmonton, and the Saturday night, I got there and it was warm. But then Saturday night, we started getting a little bit of snowfall. Just a little bit on Saturday night. I said, guys, are we going to have to cancel church tomorrow? Because in Courtney, maybe. And they looked at me like, what? It's snow. Yeah, it's snowing a fair amount out there. It's also winter, Evan. Oh, yeah, right. I guess that's what happens in winter. So we carried on with the service, needless to say. And the next morning, I threw out a joke that I've tried a few times here in Northgate Foursquare Church, and it hasn't gone over that well. And so for them, I tried it out. I said, hey, there's like this much snow on there, a centimeter maybe. I said, hey, you made it through the blizzards, and the place erupted in laughter. I'm like, finally, that joke worked. I've been waiting forever for someone to laugh at that thing. Because when I throw that out here and there's like a little dusting of snow on the ground, I say, way to go, you made it through the blizzard. Everyone's like, I know, it was touch and go. We're going to need some prayer today. The chains are on. We're getting, you know, we're it just didn't work, and so I'm never going to use that one again here, but I hope I'm going to go to Edmonton again sometime just so I can get a laugh at that joke. It's a total different world, but Edmonton is a foreign world to me. It was a foreign city, a foreign mall, a foreign everything, but it wasn't bad. And sometimes we equate foreign with bad. We decide that something that we don't know about isn't good. It's something that's unknown to us, or maybe we can't control, or maybe we don't fully understand. Well, it's just not very good. We better leave that out. That might not be a good thing for us to experience. This week, we're wrapping up our series on Wonder Women. And was anyone here for Pastor Allen sharing last week? Come on. Is that awesome? Lots of people said, oh, Pastor Allen was great, but Bernine, hey, no offense, I can't do the announcements either, it's okay. So she, Pastor Allen and Bernine did some great things here. I'm so glad to have a staff and a team to run things, and Pastor George and Pastor Joel, and just the team that's here is amazing. But he was carrying on with our sermon series on Wonder Women, and now we're wrapping it up. We've been through three women, and now we're into the fourth woman. And these women we've specifically picked out of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And we're only talking about the ones that Matthew talked about. Matthew was a disciple of Jesus, wrote the first book of the New Testament. After Jesus was gone, he wrote the first book. He got the first book in the New Testament. And in it, he starts with the genealogy of Jesus. And it was odd at that time for the genealogy of anyone to contain women, which is strange because kids don't really work without women. But women weren't in most genealogies at that time. And so Matthew didn't fill up the whole thing with women. There's a lot of guys who are mentioned and no women. But he picked four that were in there. He landed those four in there, and the four women are really kind of unique situations. The first one is Tamar, who poses as a prostitute to get revenge on her father-in-law. It's this crazy story. The second is Rahab, who I talked about last time I was here. Rahab doesn't pose as a prostitute. She just is a prostitute, and she lives this life that compels or inspires Israel in many ways. And then last week, Pastor Allen talked about Bathsheba. Bathsheba was a woman who slept with a king, had an affair with a king, and the kingdom sort of crumbled around the decision that she and he made. And then this week, we talk about Ruth. Ruth is this foreigner. She's from a different land. She's kind of known in this mix of people as being a good person from a different land. She's a good foreigner. She's one who's come and has a good story to tell. And it's funny how amazing we can sometimes think it is that, wow, someone who's different is actually good. It's weird how we think only people who are just like us will do anything good in life. And only people who understand just what we understand are ever going to accomplish anything good. Jesus showed up into this story, Ruth's story, because she was different, because she was a foreigner. And he says, I'm still for you. You don't have to be part of the original, perfect, pure breed, whatever it is, but I'm going to enter your story. In fact, Jesus enters the story of all of these women. And maybe the only thing that really ties all four of these women in is that they're all foreigners. Tamar was likely a Canaanite. Then Rahab was a Canaanite. Bathsheba was married to a Hittite, so whether she was maybe a Hittite or at least married to one, not an Israelite. And now we have Ruth, who's a Moabite. They're not Israelite. They're not pure breed Hebrew people, Jewish people. That's not who they were. Yet Jesus says, I'm part of your story. I want to be in it. I want you to be in my story. I want to put myself into this where you feel like you maybe haven't fit before, where you feel like you maybe have been cast aside before, where you feel like maybe people have assumed that you weren't that good or you weren't that capable or it's a surprise to anyone if you ever did anything good because they made all these assumptions about you. Just so you know, if you feel like you haven't fit, I'm for you. And Jesus set himself up this way. So Ruth's story is one actually about, it starts with her mother-in-law. Her mother-in-law's name is Naomi. And her and her husband live in Bethlehem. They live where Jesus was going to really start his story later on. And there's a famine in the land, and so they get up and they leave and they go somewhere else, which wouldn't have been a good news for them. They have to move to a different country to go and try to get food for themselves. And so they head off, and they end up in Moab. Their two boys marry two Moabite women. Well, eventually the husband dies, and so do the two boys die. And so then Naomi is sitting there with her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. Then things turn around back in Israel. Naomi says, you know what, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to my home people. I'm done living in this foreign place. I want to go back to what's familiar for me. I'm going to go back to where I was happy, to where things were good. I'm going to go back there. And Ruth 1, 8 to 18 is where I'm going to go. It says, then Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. They'd followed her this far, but she says, go back to your home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, we will go back with you to your people. But Naomi said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who would become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has turned against me. So she basically says, hey, there's nothing good for you over here. The only thing that's over here that you know at all is me, and I'm bitter. I'm too old to get married. I'm too old to have kids. And even if I had kids, you'd be too old to marry those kids. It would just be weird. And so what's going to actually happen here? There's nothing for you where I'm going. Why would you ever follow me? It's nothing that you even know about. What if my people don't like you? What if you don't like the food? What if you don't like the culture? What if you don't like the town or where we're going? What if you don't like, just leave, go back to what's familiar to you, because foreign is hard. Dealing with foreign culture is hard. Dealing with foreign people is hard. Just go back, Naomi says. Don't worry about it. Go to where it's comfortable for you. At this they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Ruth clung to her. I was spending time in this scripture this week, and as I was, I saw a little video on Facebook that might give you a little idea of what clinging to someone might look like. Let's just check it out right here. Cute panda, hey? Who doesn't need a little cute in life? Isn't it funny how that works? There's this panda. By the way, I would have pictured the seals at West Edmonton Mall looking a little more like that panda, flopping around and not able. But they were agile, those things. But anyways, this is what's going on. The panda, like I like that image because the panda keeps coming up. It's like, listen, no, you don't want to be on my leg. There's a better spot for you to be. Why don't you go over here? And that should be fine for you, okay? I'm going to do my job. I'm just going to do my thing. You don't need to worry about it. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, listen, hey, I'll put this in here. Now, why don't you go? And then he starts, like, kicking the other tree, like he's put up some bamboo. Just climb this thing. That thing's probably better for you. You know, just do that. And the panda's like, I like your leg. I just like being with you. I just want to follow you around. I just want to go where you go. This is about connection. It's not about where I'm supposed. This is just about me following you. And this is what Ruth did to Naomi. She clung to her. Naomi, you can't shake me. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. Ruth does something impressive here, I think. I think this is probably why her name gets to be in the Bible, why she gets to have a book written about her, why she gets to be told about for generations and generations to come, is because Naomi is making this all about foreign or familiar. Listen, we're heading to a foreign land for you, and I'm in a foreign land here. Why don't we just all go back to what's familiar for us? Why don't we all just get back into our comfort zones? Let's all get back into the place where we feel like we're not being stretched, where we don't have to try new things, where we don't have to reach new people, where we don't have to engage the unknown. Why don't we go all back to the place where we know what life will look like, we know how people will treat us, we know how we'll be received, we know what the food is like, we know what the language is like. We know everything. Why don't we all go back to that place? Wouldn't that be easier for us, Ruth? And Ruth changes the whole thought. She says, this isn't a discussion about foreign or familiar. This isn't a discussion about my comfort zone or yours. This is a discussion about how I'm going to take care of you who are hurting. That's it. So if you're going there, I'm going there. If you're walking that way, I'm walking that way. If you're heading to your own homeland, I'll come to your homeland. Naomi was willing to say, don't even follow my God. Don't even worry about my God. Just go follow your own God. She was so concerned about her comfort zone and what it would mean for them that she didn't even want her to come and engage her God because now that might be hard. When we read the Bible, we find out that following Jesus is kind of hard. Now, he gives us a lot of life. He gives us a lot of joy, a lot of purpose, a lot of hope. I mean, I love dreaming bigger than myself, like we just did. I love praying that way. I love seeing God do. We have so many testimonies. Now, when we did baptize people, we had 7 or 8 of those people came out of serious addiction and said, "I'm giving my life fully to Jesus." We have people serving on team in the lobby today who are out of addiction and are living years clean from addiction, from drugs, a year sober from alcohol, and they're finding freedom from Jesus Christ in this church. I love that. I love when that happens. But you know, it doesn't ever really get a whole lot easier to engage someone in addiction, to engage someone with alcohol challenges. It doesn't get any easier for someone who is addicted to decide to change, decide to fight for it, decide to turn their life over to Jesus. It doesn't really get easier. Jesus doesn't say, "Why don't you just make it nice and easy and get in your comfort zone and do whatever makes you feel good?" He says, "Why don't you reach outside of where you're at? Why don't you welcome in something that's a little bit different than you? Why don't you reach out to something that's a little bit different than you? Because until you do, all you'll be doing is protecting your little safe zone. You can't influence what's foreign by protecting what's familiar. If we're here to protect what's familiar, we might as well go to heaven. Heaven will be the easiest place to protect Christian culture, won't it? Go to heaven, we sing some songs, there's angels with swords that are fiery that are going to protect us, you know. It's Jesus and us, we're singing, it's going to be awesome. I don't know exactly what heaven's going to look like, but it's going to be pretty easy to protect our Christian culture. While we're here on this planet, we were never promised that that was going to be easy. And so for us, if we just decide, you know what, the best thing I need to do is I need to make sure that no one tries to ever tell me that Christianity is not true or that Christianity is not good, I better just avoid all of those people altogether, and that's probably going to mean anything foreign to me, anything foreign in my life. That might mean anything foreign from my country. Sometimes when we start talking foreign, we think of some of this immigration and refugee stuff that's going on right now. We think of Donald Trump and we think, okay, what's the political thing that he's going to spew out today? I don't want to talk politics at all. But I do want to tell you that if we can't reach foreign, then we're just protecting familiar. If we're not doing anything for those who are not like us, then we won't see any more people that are like us. That's just reality. If we can't welcome those who are different from us, then we won't see anyone change. We won't see anyone meet Jesus in a new way. What if that guy down the street who was mocking all the Christians, what if he never had a chance to come and be part of this? Never had a chance to come and see this, experience this, know this. What if? Leviticus 19:33-34 says, "When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God." This is an interesting idea. At this point, they don't even have a land. At this point, the Israelites are wandering. When God tells them this, they're actually at the base of a mountain where God is telling them all the laws and all of the rules and all the stuff that needs to happen in their culture. And he says, by the way, at some point, you're going to have a land. At some point, I'm going to provide for you a land. Now, when a foreigner comes and stays in that land, first he says, treat them like a native born. First he says, treat them as if they are one of you. And then he says, treat them like yourself. In other words, he identifies something really clearly. It's much easier to treat myself really well. And then the next easiest is treat people that are just like me really well. And the hardest is treat people that are different from me really well. But here's God saying, just so you know, I'll be giving you a land. Just so you know, I'll be providing for you. And when I do, I want you to take care of those who are not like you. This is what God sets up before they even have a land. before they're even in the land. Sometimes we think we get this land. God actually told them when they were going to the land, he said, hey, when you're in homes that you did not build, when you're at vineyards and plant getting the crops from vineyards that you did not plant, when you're in cities that you did not make, you have walls that you did not create, you have road, you have all this stuff in there that you didn't do, I want you to remember me. I want you to remember God. Why? Because when we get in there and we think all of this is mine and I get it and this is my house and my vineyard and my this and my land and all this is, now all I got to do is protect this and make sure no one touches it because it's mine. And God says, wait, did you provide it for yourself or did I provide it for you? Because once we're Christians, everything that we have is from him. If you're not a Christian, you don't have to think that way. That's a hard way to think. But once we're a Christian, we have to think that way. Everything I have is from him. Everything I have belongs to him. It came from him. It should be used for his glory. It should be used to reach those that he wants to reach. It should be used to care for those who he wants to care for. It should be used to help the Naomis of the world who lose their husband and their two sons. It should be used to look after them and care for the foreigner who shows up and needs help and needs looking after. That's what we should use it for. Why? And this is what he says. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I sort of was spending some time with that this week. Worship team, you can come on up. This week I was spending some time with that one, thinking, so what does that mean even, God? So what that they were foreigners in Egypt? Because when they were foreigners in Egypt, they weren't treated well. You were foreigners in Egypt, so now you know how to treat people well. Well, Egypt actually whipped them, beat them, mocked them, and then started killing their sons. So it's like, what are you talking about, Jesus or God? What do you mean that we're supposed to do it because we were foreigners? I think the key word is you were foreigners. You used to be enslaved, but you're no longer. You used to be slaves, but now you're free. You used to have nothing, now you have plenty. You used to have no hope, now you have much. What will you do with it for those who have no hope, for those who don't have much, for those who are broken, for those who are in need? If we're never willing to reach outside of familiar, we'll never reach what's foreign to us. Jesus doesn't seem to mind where people are from. He doesn't seem to mind if they speak a certain language and are from a different country or from a different nation or have a different upbringing. That doesn't seem to faze Jesus too much. In Ephesians 2:11-17, we see Paul talking about Jesus. What happened after the cross? The cross came and Jesus died. And there were all these Jews who said, well, we follow God and we're the best and we know how to do this and we know what makes sense to us. And so we're going to do that. We live by the law. And Jesus came, he died, he rose from the dead. And then all of a sudden everyone starts saying, maybe this changes everything. Maybe there's not just one group that's better than the rest or one group that knows the law more than the rest. Maybe there's one group that did know that more than others, and now Jesus has made room for others. It says, therefore, remember that formerly you were Gentiles by birth and called the uncircumcised by those who called themselves the circumcision. Remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel and foreigners to the covenant of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who were once far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Isn't it interesting that though as Christians we believe Jesus brought us near, we would be willing to keep others far? Jesus, thank you for welcoming me in, but no one else, right? Because they're foreign to this way. And he says, so were you, and I reached you. You didn't always get this, and I reach you. If we don't even understand what it's like to be foreign from God, we need to start hanging out with some people who are foreign from God so we can understand what that was like and remember what that was like. It's a different world to be in the hope of Jesus Christ. It's a different world to know that when we're sick, we've got one who can heal and one who will restore us and one who will bring us back to life. It's a different story when we've got the one who, when we're in debt, he can provide in miraculous ways. It's a different story when we know what our eternity looks like. It's a different story for those of us who have hope in this world. Are we willing to share it or no? Or are we too concerned about protecting what's familiar? Protecting our culture. On a broad scale, this might look like our nation. Sometimes we get so concerned about protecting the culture of our nation because it's Christian. I got to tell you, our nation's culture is not Christian. Our history is, the foundation is. If you go out to a restaurant right now, it's not Christian. If you spend some time on doing sports, if you spend some time with other people, if you spend some time on work sites and different places, this isn't a Christian nation any more than Kenya is, that looks very different than us. Any more than some other nations around the world who are actually seeing, any more than China, who has greater growth of Christianity than we do. We're shrinking in Christianity right now. And sometimes what happens is we sit there and we say, well, we better protect what we have left. But for me, when I look at the Bible, when I look at the story of Christians in the past, they stopped protecting and they started going. And when they started going, they started getting... They weren't protecting any longer at all. In fact, in Acts, they started reaching new people, and then all of a sudden the government came down on them and started persecuting them, and they saw the greatest church growth that maybe we've seen in all of history. This isn't about protecting what's familiar if we want to impact what's foreign, if we want to make a difference in what we don't quite understand. Maybe for you, that is, you know, it's a concept that you need to consider with immigration and refugees. I don't know, maybe. But maybe for you, it's just, what does it look like to step outside of your comfort zone in your neighborhood? Do you have conversations with people in your neighbors? Do they know you? My daughter yesterday was playing out in our backyard. And we moved into our house, soon became winter. There wasn't a whole lot of backyard play before right now. She was out playing in the backyard, and she comes running upstairs and knocks on the door. Dad! Dad! I said, yeah, what? We have neighbors. I said, thank you. I know. She goes, and I talked to them. I said, well, that's great, Izzy. She goes, can I talk to them again? I said, sure, as long as you're not annoying them. Go ahead. She goes and chats with them, comes back to me a little later. She goes, I talked to the neighbors again. I said, that's great, Izzy. She goes, can we make them a chocolate cake? Because for her, she's thinking they're people. We better figure out how to love them. And she didn't say, hey, Jesus told me we need to make them a chocolate cake and it's pretty serious and we better go for it. I'm not sure what they, as long as they will ensure that they do this and this and this and this. In her simple mind, she just says, we should go make them a chocolate cake. Why? Because they're our neighbors. They're close to us. And we have chocolate cake. I think sometimes we got to get a little simpler. We need to get a little more simple with our love. A little more simple with the way that we care. A little more simple with the way that we reach out. Because Jesus was simply accepted us into his kingdom. Simply accepted us, said, do you want to follow me or not? Do you want to walk with me or not? Do you want to give me your life or not? Do you want to have everything that I have and give me everything that you have? Do you just want to do that or not? And if we're a Christian, we said yes. And anyone else here can too. And he's going to call you to certain things in life. He's going to call you to certain sacrifices. He's going to call you to give up some things. But he wants to take you out of your foreigner status with him. He wants to allow you to familiarize yourself with Jesus so you would know him, you'd experience him, you would know his love. And you could start, like everyone else in this room, to share that love with others. Not just to protect what we have, but to reach out to those who we don't quite know yet. Jesus is going to do something special. Let's pray. Lord, there's a lot of discussion right now in our world about foreigners. Jesus, I pray that first and foremost in this church that we wouldn't define foreigners first as someone who are outside of Canada or not. We would define foreigners first as someone who doesn't know yet the love that you have for them. You said that we were pulled out of foreigner status in Leviticus when they were in the desert. That meant they'd been pulled out of Egypt. But when Paul speaks, that meant we were pulled out of unbelief and we were welcomed into belief. We were welcomed in to the kingdom of God. We were welcomed in to who you called us to be. You gave us life. You gave us joy. You gave us love, Lord. You didn't make us walk through a bunch of hoops. You just gave it to us. And God, I pray that we, as simply as my daughter wants to give away chocolate cake to our neighbors, our foreign neighbors, because we don't know them, I pray that we would be as freely giving the love of Jesus to those that we don't know, to those that we don't understand, to those that have different backgrounds, different perspectives, different religions even, that we would share the love of Jesus, because it's the love of Jesus and the kindness of you that has brought us to salvation. Help us to share your kindness, your life, your love, your joy, your peace, your presence with others, Jesus. In your name we pray. Amen. 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 Why don't we all stand up together? I just feel like, I'm just so thankful for God that he does so freely offer us grace and love and mercy. Can we just thank him for that quick? Can we just give him a little clap? This is our Jesus. He's given us life. He's given us hope. He's given us vision. He's allowed us to live, and he's given you love to give. So let's give it, and let's believe that as we reach to those who are different from us, we will see people know Jesus and his fullness and his life. And then next time we open up that baptism tank, we're going to be dunking like crazy again because people are finding out about Jesus Christ. Let's believe it. Love you. Have a good week. Why don't you bring someone back next week?